All right, gentlemen. Rabbi, welcome guys to the Beis Medrash Gavod Halacha Beis Yashbut. My name is Dan Gordon, and I'm a Berech here for the center for the second part of my day. The first part of the day I work in landscaping. Myself and my team, we maintain and build gardens in and out of the Grand Yerushalayim. And really it's a real great pleasure for me to addressing you two guys today. I'm so happy that you came. And if I'm not mistaken, you guys are learning where?
Mechon
Meir. All right. And you came with the rabbi. Once again, please, what's your name, Rabbi?
Nathanael
Frankel. Very good. Okay. So the building that we're in was complete about 7 years ago. As some of you guys made some comments about how nice the entrance is and how nice the foyer looks over here. It is a relatively new building. We moved in here from another location in town. And the building contains Avreichim, Rosh Yeshivos, other Rabbanim, authors of many Sfarim. We actually write many of them Sfarim here in the Mitzvahs Tulus La'aretz. From the Yerushalmis to books on Halacha. And it's really a unique center in the Torah world. And it is head by HaGaon, Harav Yosef Efrati Shlita, who was the main Talmud of Rabbi Eliashib Zatzal. And he began and dedicated his life now for many decades to making Mitzvahs Tulus La'aretz something that was an integral part of the knowledge and the practice here in Eretz HaKodesh and Eretz Yisrael. Since we came back here, we can now do these mitzvahs again. So it was...
Just ask, if you guys have words you don't know, so you could ask, and we'll translate.
Right, I'm not sure where you guys are holding...
Every word should be said in English.
Every word should be said in English.
Mitzvot Tulus La'aretz are the mitzvahs that are contingent on the land.
Very good. All right, I'll do my best to remember that. Thank you. So in Parshas Ve'eschanan, it's very interesting because we know that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu that he could not come into the land. He was not going to lead the people into the land of Israel. And that was going to be, who was going to lead the people? Joshua was going to lead the people. But Moshe Rabbeinu did not have there wasn't the end all right there. He decided, no, I'm going to pray to Kodesh Baruch Hu, and I'm going to see if he let me into the land. So he prayed, and he prayed many, many times, but in the end, the Kodesh Baruch Hu told him that there's no way, he's not coming to the land. And what's interesting is that Rashi, over there, brings down a medrash that says, well, why did he want to come to the land so badly? Why was he pressing? His disciple, Joshua, was going to bring the people to the land. What's the big deal? It should be a great honor for him. No. The Medrash says, because he wanted to be able to fulfill the mitzvahs of the land of Israel. And that was so precious to him that he begged Kodesh Baruch Hu to let him in, to do that. And here we are, the later of the generations, 3,500 years after Moshe Rabbeinu, and here we are, the land of Israel, and Baruch Hashem, we're able to do these mitzvahs once again. So it's really a great pleasure that we have this building and this institution head by Rabbi Efrati, and that we have this room which we finished this evening, literally, and that we can do our first shiur here. So I welcome you guys and thank you for coming. Where are you guys from, by the way? Like in general, from.
You want to introduce everyone? No. Okay, guys, introduce yourself quickly.
Okay. I'm Yehuda Baron. I've been in Israel almost 3 years. I'm from Boston, Mass.
Hey, you're then welcome. All right.
I'm Marcel. I'm from Hungary.
Ah, very nice.
I'm Alex. I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Oh.
Cloud from Johannesburg.
Nahum from Carmel, California. And okay. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. Spinny of Audios from San Diego.
I'm not thankful. New York.
I'm Akiva, Northern Ireland.
Yako from California.
Amazing. And we have three continents here at least. If you can't, Canada is the fourth continent. I'm from Montreal originally, so we have at least five, six different countries. This is great. Small group, but very diversified. Okay, let's get started. Can anybody name any of the mitzvahs of the land of Israel? Anybody know anything? Go on. No? Are you part of the group?
No.
No, no. You can still come in. Yeah?
Shemitah.
Shemitah, very nice.
Yovel.
Huh?
Shemitah and Yovel.
Very nice.
Trumas and
Maestras. Trumas and Maestras, alright. Anybody else? Rabbi, you want to slip one in?
Orla.
Orla, very good. Anybody ever hear of the tractate Brachos? Okay, so the tractate of Brachos is found in one of the six Siddurim of orders of the Mishnah, and that order is called Zrayim. Seeds. That's the first tractate. It's called Brachos. But nobody really knows what happens after that. But what happens after that are all the mitzvahs of the land of Israel. So we named a few of them here. I'll just go through a few others with you guys. And then we'll... Yeah.
Peah.
Very nice. You know what Peah is?
No, it's the corner of the field that you have to leave.
Okay.
Right.
Yes. Shechacha. Awesome.
Very nice. Shechacha as well. And Leket. These are all grouped together, these three mitzvahs, as the mitzvahs that are for the poor, and for the almana, which is the widow, and for the ger, the convert that lives in the land. So we also have demai, which is something that is unsure whether it had trumas and meiser, which we'll get into shortly, taken from it. We have kilayim, we have shmita, as we said, we have trumas and meiser, we have chala, hafrashes chala as well, which is in this seder, and orla and bikurim. So we really have a huge gamut, which is 1/6 of all the Torahs found in Seder Zrayim, which is known as seeds. So I'm going to review some of these with you guys, just to give you a little general an overview of what they are. Anybody know where fruit comes from, by the way?
Trees.
Okay, very good. Good. Fruit does come from trees. Can I have a volunteer or two here for a second? Here, why don't you come up for a second? You guys come up, yeah? Alright, first thing I want to do is I want one guy to pass out these,
yeah,
and the other guy to pass out these. This is where we start to get unconventional in what we're about to do. Because unless you understand a little bit of how God created nature, then we're not going to really be able to appreciate God's mitzvahs land. So, right. You guys know anything about the parts of flour? On a most basic level, the flour, which for those who are married, we bring to our home every Erev Shabbos for our wives, contains like man and woman, male parts and female parts. So if you take a look at the picture, I have the color version, you guys have the the black and white version, but if you take a look at this, does anyone see something that's called a stamen? Okay. Anybody see something called a stigma? Alright, so which do you think is the male part and which do you think is the female part?
Stigma's the male, stamen's the female.
So the stamen is actually the male part, and where at the tips, if you see over there, look at the tips then, that's where the pollen is. Yeah? And if you look at the stigma, that's the female part. And that part, she's very sticky. Now, anybody know anything about pollination and pollinators?
Bees.
How that all works? Yeah, bees? Very good. Anybody know any other way to pollinate flowers? How does this... pollen move around.
Wind,
that's another way, right? Bees and wind, those are the two most often found ways that pollen gets moved around. So let me tell you a little story about the birds and the bees for a second, alright? I know we're getting back to the basics here, but this is important to appreciate what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. So the bee, as a pollinator, he's a very inconspicuous creature. What does he do? Besides occasionally sting people, he's actually a very docile creature. The honeybee, we're talking. He flies around from flower to flower. You know what his purpose is from flying from flower to flower is?
Trying to get the nectar from the flower.
Very nice, excellent. But all he cares about is that sweet, sweet nectar that's found where? if you look at the picture over here, it's found way deep inside the flower. This is a picture of a lily, but in any flower, it's found way deep inside the flower. So what does he have to do to get to the nectar? He has to fly by the stamen and the stigma. Now, anybody ever hear of bee pollen? This stuff they sell in the health food stores, you know, they look like orange and yellow little balls. And so what happens is that the bee flies into the flower, and he flies by the stamen. And as he's flying by, inconspicuously, the pollen happens to just rub off on his back, and he doesn't like that because it disrupts his flying, so he pushes it off with one leg to his hind leg, and it all balls up over there, collects over there, but he's flying from flower to flower, and he doesn't have a chance every time a little bit of pollen sticks to his back to start rubbing it down to his leg and collecting it. So what does he do? He doesn't do anything, he just flies and goes for the nectar. But as he flies into the next flower, with some of this pollen on his back, he rubs by the stigma. And hence we have pollination. That is the great wonder that Kosh Baruch Hu did for us in order to create fruit, because from this basic process, we're able to get all the multiple varieties of fruit in the whole world that we have. And it's truly amazing, because the bee has no idea he's part of this. Because all he cares about is, like you said, is the nectar. Just imagine what a phenomenal phenomenon this is. So what happens is that once the pollen touches the stigma, then the stigma then becomes, in a sense, impregnated. And if you look at the next picture over here, you can see that in the core of the flower will begin now the fruit. As the petals generally fall off, the beginning of a little fruit begins. And it turns into, in this case, an apple. So, how many apples? Guys, name off apples. Name off some apples. What kind of apples do we have?
Green apples.
Green apples, okay.
Granny Smith.
Granny Smith apples.
Delicious.
Delicious.
Pink Lady.
Pink Lady.
Macintosh,
right? Oh, Macintosh. You're Canadian? We grew fields of Macintosh apples there in Quebec. All right. Fuji. Yellow Delicious. Fuji. So many different types of apples, yeah? Tell me something. Anybody ever meet Mrs. Granny Smith?
Somebody must have. She was a real person.
She was a real person. And her apple lives on to this day. And you know what's interesting, guys, is that nobody in this room, even if you're 100 years old, would never have met Miss Granny Smith, because Miss Granny Smith, she passed away over 150 years ago. But her legacy still lives on in the apple that is still named after her. That's a weird thing. How is that possible? Her apple survived 150 years? What? Let me ask something. How do you think this happens? Does everyone go to this little, like, corner of England where she lived and just keeps picking from her trees and then distributing to all the supermarkets in the world? Like, how do we have so many Granny Smith apples? Anybody have any idea?
They keep growing those trees.
Ah, they keep growing those trees.
That's the preferred apple tree.
Very nice. They keep growing those trees.
98% of apples are bitter. And, you know, if you get a good strain, you know, it kind of sticks.
Right, so probably what happened to old Miss Granny Smith is that she planted maybe a seed from a wild apple, or however the story may have gone, and this tree came and produced some apples, and she tried it, and she would make apple pie with it, and she'd give out to her friends and neighbors, and then the friends and neighbors were like, wow, I like that. You know, like, let's get into something here that's related to what we're talking about. This is where we're going to really start to get into what's called the kishkas, what's some of the depths of Mitzvahs, the land of Israel. I'm going to start with something that's called Kilayim. Kilayim, there are many forms of Kilayim. Now, the Torah tells us, anybody ever hear of Kilayim, by the way? You heard of Kilayim? Do you know anything about Kilayim at all? Like any... Right, very nice. Wool
and flax.
And flax. Together. Which are otherwise known as
shatnez,
right? Hold on a second, guys. Now let's take a look at my jacket here. All right, see that little tag over here? Has a little microscope on it, And it says, Naki, clean from any thoughts of shabbos. Now the suit didn't come this way. I had to go, after I brought my suit, I had to go bring this to a specialist who had to look for shabbos, right? What is shabbos? Is one form of kilayim. Shabbos, the Torah tells us, like you said very nicely, is the mixture of two types of material woven together, sewn together, and it's prohibited to wear this mixture. That's why, I mean, hey, wear it. I'm wearing my jacket, I wear it. So if I wanted to make a rug out of this mixture, that's no problem, because I don't wear it. The Torah tells only something you wear is prohibited. It's interesting because there's only one person in the history of humankind that was permitted to wear shabbos, this mixture of wool and linen sewn together. Anybody have an idea?
Oh,
dude, from now on, don't answer questions. You're too smart. It's a Chacham of the room. No, I appreciate it. You're right. That was a trick question, and I didn't know if anyone was going to get it, but you're right. The Kohen Gadol, in the base of Mikdash, the time, thousands of years ago, he was able to wear shabbos. Why? Because the Zohar tells us, the mystical elements of our tradition tell us that the wool was related to Hevel, because he was a shepherd. This is the children of Adam, Arishon, the first man, and Cain, his other son, who was a farmer, and who killed who?
Cain killed
Abel. Right. So the farmer killed the shepherd, and there was strife because of jealousy. So this strife lived on in a kind of in a mystical sense. And so the Torah, this is one of the reasons, there are many reasons, Torah forbid this mixture together, because they didn't know even from the time of Cain and Abel. But the Kohen Gadol, who's the supreme teacher of the nation, he was allowed to wear so that he can bring peace amongst brothers, so to speak. That's just a little side excerpt on shabbos. Okay, very good. Any other types of kilayim? Yeah.
Breeding two kinds of animals.
Very nice. Breeding two kinds of animals together. I mean, you know, does anybody know of a well-known animal that is bred and used today actually quite often?
A mule?
You guys are answering every question that I have about this. You guys sure you never heard of Mitzvahs of the Land of Israel before? And I mean, I feel like you guys are fooling me or something. But I bet you're right. Of the mule. It's a cross, if I'm not mistaken, between a horse, a type of horse, and I actually wrote it down here. And, what?
Donkey.
A donkey, right. Horse and a donkey. So the Torah tells us this type of breeding is forbidden. It's very interesting because there's also another type of kilayim that the Torah tells us is also forbidden, which is the pulling, the working of two different types of animals together. For example, an ox and the sheep. They can't both pull together. Right. You know, I don't know about you guys, but you know, when I read this stuff, I think to myself, God really made his Torah the most advanced animal rights document in the world. Nothing comes close to that today. I mean, come on. You can't pull two types of animals together. Like, what's with that? That's beautiful. It's advanced. It's our even today, for today's standards, it's called advanced thinking and animal rights. But this was written 3,500 years ago. It was written, but it was intended since the beginning of time. So if anyone says, who are the greatest animal rights activists in the world? Hashem. Just tell the Jewish people. Just tell the Jewish people. And where do you have that proof? Kilayim. There are many other examples in the Torah, but that's another form of kilayim. There's also another form of kilayim. And another form of kilayim is the plant. Yeah.
Is it also with trees? Where you can't take like an apple tree and a pear tree and combine them together?
Come here, take that away. Yeah. Do you not know what those are? Those are called secondaries. I've had those for 16 years. Yeah, and what happened to my finger was not that I had to chop it off. I actually was pruning some pomegranate trees. There's a little safety clip over there. I was pruning some pomegranate trees last week. And this is a pomegranate branch. And I think a thorn must have got into my finger. I was in the hospital all last night. My hand was about twice the size, and I had to cut my finger and take out whatever was inside. So that's why I have this bandage since yesterday. So I need you to help me out here. I want you to cut this right over here, please. Amen. Thank you. Yeah? Oh, beautiful. Okay. All right, guys. I'm not going to give you too much of an obvious hint, but can anyone tell me what this is?
Fig.
These are figs, right? Oh, these figs on here. You guys are awesome, man. All right, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to cut off this side branch over here. Right? And I'd like you to cut this right over here.
This part right here?
Yeah, right over there. Okay. So let's get back to Granny Smith for a second. Now, Granny Smith, her neighbors came over to her and said, listen, Mrs. Old Smith, you know, I really like the apple that your tree over there. I'd like to have the same apple tree in my garden. So what did Miss Granny Smith say? Sure, you know, no problem. Make yourself a cutting, you know. Make yourself a cutting. What does that mean, take yourself a cutting? Well, see, back then, the average person had to work much harder for their food than we do today. Today, we have to work very hard to make them to afford food, but back then, they actually had to work hard for their food. So they had a lot of knowledge on how to grow and how to cultivate. So what they did was like this. So when Mrs. Granny Smith said, go ahead, take yourself a cutting, what she meant was something that the Torah talks about, which is grafting. Anybody ever hear of grafting? You know what it is?
I hope so.
Okay. You grew up on a farm?
I do not.
Okay.
It's California education.
It's California education system. Okay, very good.
You take the branch of one tree and you like cut off a bit, and then you cut off a bit of on another tree, you cut off a bit, and you kind of tape it together.
Right, okay. So here, you hold that for a minute. Yeah, you're holding on to the fig, right? And I want you to also hold on to the pomegranate. No, we won't use this. Okay, this is also a fig. So, the Torah tells us like this. Grafting is perfectly permitted. No problem. Do it. But there's a way to do it that is permissible, and a way to do it that is prohibited. So, what might be a way to do it that is permissible?
Same kind.
Anybody, you want to teach a class? No, okay. It's beautiful. The Torah tells us this, something called kilei harkava. It's a type of kilei. Kilei, by the way, means mixture. And what it is that if I was going to take a fig and graft it on top of another fig like this, what do we give you a little bit of background? When I say grafted on top of, this was actually a miniature tree. So we dug it out of the ground. It was a small little tree, maybe even thinner than this. Thin branch, had some roots, and then I'm taking a piece of another tree, a branch just like you might see right here, and I make a certain incision so that the inside can be connected to the inside of this. I slip it in. There's many forms and ways to do grafting, technically speaking, and then I bind them together, and that's grafting. And then they fuse. What's interesting is that fig on top of fig is perfectly permissible. Fig on top of pomegranate is prohibited. The Torah tells us that you cannot do this. So, what did Mrs. Granny Smith's neighbors do? I don't know. But one thing is for sure, we have Granny Smith apple today. Thanks, that was really specimen. Just go after that. Your arms. Your hands okay with that? This is hard wood to cut. So what the Torah tells us today is like this. By the way, 95%+ of all fruit trees are done by grafting. Does anybody know of species of fruit that cannot be grafted onto another type of species?
Clementine?
Banana's an interesting case study, yeah? We'll get to that maybe later. But banana is actually not considered a tree. It's considered a herbaceous shrub. That's why, what's the bracha on a banana, if anyone knows? It's borei pri
ha'adam.
Right, it's not borei pri. It's because it's not considered a tree halachically. It's considered a herbaceous shrub that grows anew every year. Fleshy stalks. Anybody else know about...
Maybe dates?
I don't understand the question.
So, I'll tell you. We talked about grafting. So, pomegranate can technically fuse the flesh, the tissue can fuse with a fig. It can happen. But, and like most species of fruit, it can happen. They can fuse together. Just like Kilei Behema, like we said before, with the mixing of two different animals to create the mule. I mean, they bred together, the horse and the donkey, and another creature came out. Except, not every type of fruit can do that. It's actually one of the seven special species that are mentioned in the Torah in the land of Israel, and it's grape. Grape, for example, cannot be grafted onto any other species, only on grape. That's how special this... It can't be fused with something else. It's really an interesting study unto itself.
Is that also called kiwayin?
So, the way to do with grape is that you just take a branch and you just stick it into the ground. By the way, esrog that we use on Sukkot is the same thing. You take a branch. If you guys want to try this at home, you could do this. Very interesting. Or with either with a grape... Or with an esrog, you just take a branch, cut, stick it in some soil, make sure it's nicely moist and watered, and in, you know, a good percentage of the cases, you'll see some new leaves form after a few months, and you just made yourself a new grapevine, or an esrog tree. What's interesting is that if you planted, let's say, Granny Smith apple seeds, you will not get the exact genetic makeup. So, when we want Granny Smith apples, the way Granny Smith had it in her garden 150 years ago, the only way to do it, to make an exact genetic replication, was through grafting. By actually taking a branch off of the original tree, and that's many generations later, where they have many fields all over the world, Granny Smith, so they take it, and they have huge production systems where that's all they do. I'm a guy, I want to start a Granny Smith apple farm. So I go to another guy who can sell me 5,000 trees, Granny Smith apple trees. And I'm getting the exact same genetic copy that Mrs. Granny Smith had 150 years ago. Okay, let's move on. Yeah.
Is this a prohibition to do only in the land of Israel, or is this a prohibition in general?
Very good. So kilayim is the prohibition of mixing two different species, kilei arkava, grafting, is not permitted to do anywhere in the world, not just in Eretz Yisrael.
It's also prohibited to ask a non-Jew to do it in the beginning.
Correct.
Can you buy one from a non-Jew?
Okay, so you're asking very good practical questions here. The reason for that is because 95%+ of all fruit trees that we buy on the market today, you know, I have a garden. I want some fruit trees. I go, I want to buy a plum, I want to buy an apple, I want to buy a lemon, I want to buy a peach. It's a market that's filled with kilayim. It's a market that's filled with prohibited forms of what we just talked about now. And so one of the things we do here in the Beis Medrash is that we have a select group of rabbis and extremely smart individuals who go out there to the different growers who do this kind of thing, and they collect statistics, and every so often there is published from our center over here statistics on what types of trees, when you go to the garden center and you want to buy some fruit trees, what types of trees could be potentially dangerous for you to buy because they're a forbidden form of grafting? And what kind are safe to buy because they're a permitted form of grafting? Yes.
Yeah. So the question that I have is that the act of grafting might be yasur, but does that extend to the product? Does then the product, in other words, let's say a person violates and he grafts and then he creates the fruit.
Right.
Is the fruit asur or is it?
So I have a fruit tree in my garden that is kilayim. Why? Because the list that we produce here in the Beis Medrash tells me, hey, this has a big chance that what your peach tree is kilayim. Now I have peaches. Now what am I supposed to do? I don't know 100%, but even if I knew 100%, by the way, the fruit itself is not usur. The fruit itself is not prohibited. You can still eat of that fruit. Thank God. See, Kosh Baruch Hu, he's very forgiving. He knew in this 21st century we'd have all these problems, and he did not forbid the fruit. But if I knew, for example, as a gardener myself of 26 years, if I knew in one of my gardens for sure, 100%, without a doubt, that a particular type of fruit tree was done in a forbidden fashion, the grafting is done in a forbidden way, then there's a question whether I can maintain it. I might be able to eat from its fruit. That is for sure no problem, because there's no prohibition to gain benefit from the tree, but can I now maintain it and allow it to flourish and do what it needs to do as a fruit tree? That's a different question.
But you're allowed to take a cutting of a tree that was kilayim.
Yeah.
And so your only problem is if this very tree was grafted.
Yeah.
Kilayim.
The problem with kilayim is the doing of kilayim, of the doing of the forbidden grafting. Once it's done, then you get the whole different halachic issues and questions. Yeah.
Does this also apply to hybridization? Like if you have a lemon and a lime together or something and you have like a new fruit, in which case I then have to plant that fruit and eat it, and it's a new species and you can...
Yeah, so there are many different ways to produce new fruit, different types of cross-pollination. You know, when we invent new things today, we do it in all kinds of ways, from genetic, microscopic levels to actually taking pollen by hand and putting from one flower, putting onto another flower, and you know, it's a lot of experimentation. But in general, what you're saying is it's okay. Yes, we can. Israel every year, for example, I can just tell you, 2 years ago, it's our last year, they came out with 70 different types of peppers. I mean, 70 different, I go to the supermarket, I don't even know 70 different types of vegetables, let alone Israel inventing 70 different types of peppers in 1 year. It's mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling.
The invention itself is permitted?
Well, what we talked about was only restricted to fruit trees, not to vegetables. There is another type of kilayim, though, which has to do with vegetables. Yeah, you want to ask a question? Okay. There is another type of kilayim. You see what he was... I felt he wanted to ask me something about vegetables and kilayim, and I had to move in that direction.
What I was going to ask is, I've seen people, what's the word? I don't know what the word is, but make like a flower. So that's not a problem, because you can't eat a flower. People make a flower so that it's like a specific color, like a new color.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. So today, with technology, we can do almost anything when it comes to... farmers that grow potatoes. So, as we know, there are lots of insect and disease problems in fields. So, today, for example, the seed producers are genetically alternating the seed to contain already inside of it the pesticide or herbicide, the chemical killer for a particular bug that's going to come and eat it in the field. Well, the potato already has that chemical inside of it genetically. So the bug can't do anything now because it takes a bite, done. It's done. The bug's done. It's fascinating what they do today. Absolutely fascinating. But you prompted me on the question of kilayim with seeds. So there is another type of kilayim, and that's called kilei zrayim. The kilayim, the forbidden mixture of seeds. What does that mean? What does it mean practically? So the Torah tells us practically what it means. You can't sow different types of species of seeds together in one place. Which means, it calls the Torah tells us palas yad, it's that you take some seeds, it's that you take some wheat, and you take some rye, and then you take some radishes, and you take some rhubarb, and you take some whatever other type of our vegetable there is, and you take those seeds, and you just throw them on the ground. That's forbidden to do. But who plants like that today? Nobody plants like that today. I, for example, in my gardens that I maintain and that I build, I try to, as much as possible, to include vegetable areas and fruit trees, because I like that kind of stuff. I kind of have an organic farming background, so that to me is kind of important. And so I also want to really push this stuff, this material that we're talking about today, on my customers, you know, that they should also benefit from doing these beautiful things that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do, not even for one second, because he couldn't come into the land. But here we are, the benefit, the privilege, special privilege to be able to do these very great mitzvahs. So I really push on my customers. So when I plant vegetables in the different gardens that I have that have vegetable areas, so there is a type of key lime that I do have to be aware of, because I don't just plant a bunch of different seeds like that. We don't do it like that anymore. We do it more, you know, orderly. You know, with on rows. Many times I don't even buy seed anymore. I buy starters. Do you know guys what starters are? Like, they're like already little plants. They're about this big, and all I do is like buy them from the garden center, and then I, you know, put them in. So there is another.
We did some planting on Tu B'Shvat. In Machon.
What? Vegetables?
Yeah. We did trees and then vegetables.
What type of?
Croup.
Huh?
Croup. We planted croup on Tu B'Shvat.
Great. Actually, that's nice. How'd you guys enjoy that?
Yeah, it was great.
Isn't that nice?
You did it in lines.
You did it in lines. Anybody have a background of growing vegetables at all? Or? It's the best. This summer, if you guys can, plant some just cherry tomatoes. Just plant some cherry tomatoes. First of all, they grow very, very fast. And once we're done this evening, you'll know also how to separate trumas and miso, so you don't have to worry about, you know, doing something that's forbidden when you're able to actually pick those cherry tomatoes. But cherry tomatoes, to grow. So you're right, you plant them in rows. So if I was going to, I had one area, let's say about this big. Now I wanted to plant lettuce, cherry tomatoes. I don't have a big space here, so I want to plant things pretty tight together. You have to be very careful here, because Kilei's Rhyme tells us that I can't plant them in such proximity that they will be forbidden to me.
As in grape and non-grape fruit trees, or?
We're talking about vegetables only.
Oh, specifically vegetables?
Specifically, yes. Another form of key lime called the key lime of seeds.
Now, does banana vegetables fall into that category?
What's that?
Banana?
No, banana does not fall into this category. You guys are asking tough questions. You're looking for all the exceptional questions you guys are asking.
We're an exceptional group.
I see that. I see. You guys are awesome. So bananas we'll have to get to shortly. No, seeds, a banana, it's very interesting, because what's called a vegetable and what's called a tree, halachically, according to the Torah. So just very briefly, what type of characteristics do you think a tree might have?
Doesn't die back in the winter.
Okay. So meaning it has a trunk and has branches. Yeah? It lives from year to year.
Just budding flowers, maybe? No, I guess that wouldn't be true.
But after the flowers, fruit?
Right.
Right? So, halachically speaking, we have a lot of problems because there are all kinds of different species of fruits, like you said before. And so we don't know how to classify these things. Are they classified as vegetables? And therefore, if they're classified as vegetables, then there's a whole different set of laws pertaining to them. Or are they classified as trees? Now, sometimes it's not so obvious. For example, a grapevine. What do you say a grapevine is? A tree or a vegetable?
It's a vine.
It's a vine. So a vine is actually considered a tree, a modified type of tree, but it's a tree, not a vegetable. Because really a vegetable, one of the defining characteristics of a vegetable is that it produces its fruit in that same year, and it dies within that same year. It doesn't live from year to year. It's called what's called an annual.
Don't grapes die back?
So grapes actually kind of do a hibernation thing, because it's a deciduous type of plant. But the roots live from year to year, the trunk lives from year to year, and the fruit only gets better in time. And it doesn't produce in its first year. That's a defining quality. For example, who's ever heard of passion fruit? Passiflora. You guys know what it is? Okay, so when that fruit came to Israel, there was a real big halachic issue there. They weren't sure, the rabbis, whether this is considered more like a fruit. And therefore, if it's a fruit, then you imagine Orlo Rabbi, which we'll get to very shortly, right after this. Or if it's a more like a vegetable, because it only lives for a few years, 7 years. That's what it lives for. And maybe it produces fruit in the first year. And for sure, if it produces fruit in the first year, then even if it lives for 7 years, we'll call it more like a vegetable. For example, an eggplant. An eggplant, I don't know if anybody knows, an eggplant's a plant that actually lives for 3 years. But it's considered a vegetable, because you say bracha brei pri ha'adam on it. But after, by the third year, the fruit is no longer good anymore. It's like tough. It's not as nice as it is in the first year, maybe the second year. So there's all kinds of different defining categories. So let's get back to just the kilayim of seeds, and that is, it's important that when I plant vegetables, that I leave the proper spacing. That's what it comes down to right now. Is I have lettuce, and I have carrots, and I have tomatoes. So we need to do what is called shalosh tefachim, three tefach. What's the measurement of a tefach? Anybody know? From now on, don't answer any questions. No, I'm just kidding. That was great. You guys are good. Yeah, tefach, a handbreadth. Yeah. So, for example, next time you plant, guys, remember this, because this is the Torah telling you this, not me. You got to take three hand breaths. So you want to end your row of lettuce right here. Now you want to start your carrots. So you got to, from the last plant that you put into the ground, you got to then take your fist, do this. One, two, three. And here you can start your new species. If you don't do that, and you plant right after, which your common sense would say, well, that's wasted space. Of course I'll do that. I'll plant it right after my lettuce. Then Torah tells us, no, don't do that. So, guys, please, especially not where you guys learn. We don't want to bring avers, you know, we don't want to bring bad things to any plant. Just remember this when you plant vegetables next time. If you have two different species, leave three hand breaths between different species of vegetables. In all directions, by the way. Alright guys, let's move on to Orla for 2 minutes. Just something brief. Anybody ever hear of Orla?
Yes.
Yeah?
It sounds like a vegetable.
What do you guys know about Orla?
You can't take a fruit for a tree for 3 years.
Very nice. Very nice. Really, in short, it's just like you said. When you plant a fruit tree in the land of Israel, then you cannot take of its fruit for 3 years. That's it. Somebody might ask me, well, hold on a second. I live in California. We plant fruit trees all the time. Are you telling me that last year when I planted my fruit tree over there and I took from this fruit before I left for Israel, I was prohibited, I wasn't allowed to do that? Nobody told me. So the truth is that it's true. Even in Chutz La'aretz, even outside of Israel, if you plant a fruit tree, you cannot take of its fruit for 3 years. If you planted it, and you know for sure that you planted it, and you remember exactly when you planted it, you cannot take the fruit for 3 years. Yes?
What do you do in the fourth year nowadays?
Okay, I think we should... In order, I think, to conserve on headspace, let's say, and to get onto some other fun stuff, I think we should probably get into Trumas and Maaser. Because Trumas and Maaser, Orla, and all this stuff. They're all kind of related. But before we get into that, and I do want to answer your question, because you asked the question about what's called Netaravai, is the fourth year, the year after the Orla years. Meaning, my 3 years have passed, woohoo! I can eat! It's great! Finally! I've been waiting for you for so long, every year. By the way, what happens... I have another bowl here for a second. Here, I'm going to pass some of those out. Let me ask you something. We talked about Orla, that when you come, that when you plant a fruit tree, Chai Shalom Aleichem, welcome. This guy looks like he knows stuff like you do. No?
I taught him everything.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of it. Another guy to answer all my trick questions. Okay. Did anybody read Hebrew here, by the way? Yeah? A little bit. Okay, so how about this? Take a look over here. Can you see that? You see that where it says this bold second line over here? Okay. So one of the tractates is called Orla. Let me ask you this. I want to plant my fruit tree, but you know what? Anybody know what a lemon looks like? You ever see a thorn on a lemon tree?
Yes.
Okay, they're very nasty. Bottom line, you don't want to get into a scrap of a lemon tree because you will not come out unscathed. A lemon tree has a lot of thorns. And you know what? Some people might say, hey, you know what? This tree is can actually keep people out of my property. You know what? I think I'm going to plant the lemon tree, and I've seen this before, as a hedge around my perimeter. Plant a bunch of lemon trees as a hedge around my perimeter. Does that sound like a reasonable thing to do? I mean, why not? Plant lemon trees as a hedge around your perimeter of your property and keep people out.
Seems like he's being a bit sour.
Why?
Because
he wants to keep people out, right? Right.
No, he likes puns.
Okay, all right. Very nice. You guys, the men are a good group of people. Okay, so now I want to plant for lemons as lemon trees as a hedge. You have to keep people out. No pun intended. Now, I just said, when you plant a fruit tree, then you have to wait 3 years before you can eat of the fruit. So my question to you is that when the Torah tells, when you plant a fruit tree, you can't eat fruit in the first 3 years, it's because you're planting the fruit tree for the fruit. But what happens if you plant the fruit tree not for the fruit? Will the tree still produce some fruit? Mm-hmm. Are those fruit permissible even in the first year? Or do you still have to wait 3 years? Go.
Still have to wait 3 years.
What do you guys say?
Still have to wait 3 years. According to the right now, the move. Maybe.
You still... Okay. So, I'm about to give you not a very encouraging answer, but it depends. Okay, I'll tell you. Let's actually read. I will read it to you. The first Mishnah of Tractate Orla. For those of you who can follow along in Hebrew, you could do that. Hanoteh l'sayeg l'koros. One who plants for a hedge or for beans, you are not obligated in Orla, says the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi goes on to say, even afilu amar hapnimi lemachal v'achitzon lesayag hapnimi chayal v'achitzon patur. Rabbi Yossi is a real smart guy. He says, even if you have one tree and you intend that one side should be for a hedge and the other side should be for the fruit that you want, the outside, is you do not have to wait the 3 years of Orla, but the inside you do. Amazing.
But where do you try to line the tree?
You're welcome to come to the Beis Medrash and we'll learn the Sugya together in the Gemara.
Very good question.
I want to take your question a bit further. I'm a wise guy. I'm thinking to myself, you mean this Mishnah is basically giving me a way out of Orla? You know what you said? It said, if I plant a tree for a hedge, yeah, right, and I want to plant it for beams, like for wood, yeah, right, you know, I don't have to wait the Orla years? Yeah, man, that's my hedge over there, lemon hedge. You take lemon, but you just planted it last year. Yep, but it's a hedge. I planted it with the intention of it being a hedge. Go ahead, take my lemons. It even says it here. Look, first edition of Orla. You don't have to wait Orla years. Oh, great, man, that's good. Let's eat. Sounds sketchy to you guys a little bit. Something's not right here. So,
what if you had both kavanot? Should have much purity in your kavanot?
So you brought up the exact point that I want to bring up. Is your intention enough? What do you guys think? Is your intention enough? I just gave you a little, you know, little live stage act here. But, you know, is your intention enough?
No, on Shabbos it is.
Huh?
On Shabbos with Mokitz and stuff it is.
So right?
I don't think so. I think you also have to plant it specifically in a place where it acts as a hedge.
Come and teach. Beautiful. And also, you're right. The Gemara tells us what you said. The Gemara tells us what you said. There are different opinions. Those who are most righteous say, come on, believe the guy. You don't need any proof. I'll get to what you said in a second. You don't need any proof. If he says he planted it for a hedge, he planted it for a hedge. End of story. Very nice. Another person said, you know what? His intention? That's nice, he has intention. But you know what? We have a way to check his intention. And that goes to what you said. If you're planting it in a hedge, well, first of all, where do you plant the hedge?
On the border.
On the border, yeah. I planted right in the middle of my property. Does that look like a hedge to you? What are you dividing here? It's my hedge, look.
It's the machitza.
Put the women on this side, the men on this side, please, everyone. No. That's right. So place, where you place the trees, the Gemara tells us, is very important. Because that will prove your intention. Really? It's a hedge? Well, you know what? Hey, it's on the border here. Okay, good. It's one proof. Something else? When you plant a hedge...
You don't prune it.
What's that?
You don't prune it as much, maybe.
Opposite. Actually, you want it to get thick.
Yeah, you don't prune it.
No. So
you do prune it.
So you prune a lot different a hedge than you would if it's a fruit tree where you want to produce fruit. Totally different styles of pruning. You know, I'm just coming out there with my, like, you know, hedge pruners, and I'm just with my, you know, like pruning, maybe just getting thick. I'm chopping fruit. I don't care about that. I just want it to be thick. Another proof.
Like, what happens if it's something like a pomegranate tree that doesn't grow in the form of a hedge? Do you say, oh, I'm just going to plant a bunch of pomegranate trees, and that's going to be my hedge, but pomegranate trees are usually very thin and not very hedge-like.
The Gemara tells us exactly what you said. Another person in the Gemara tells us that what if you plant as a hedge, well, it has to be the right kind of species. Because, you know what? The Gemara gives an example of a grapevine. I like my hedge. A grapevine. Mother of Morley, guys. Eat, they take wine. What hedge is that? Let's climb off over it, you know, it's this thin. So, you're right, the Gemara tells us that. Gemara tells us that the plant that you use for hedging has to be also, like, useful as a hedge, because a grapevine is not useful as a hedge.
Have you tried climbing through a grapevine? It's not so easy.
Oh, no, we're talking about the first 3 years, for Orla. Yeah, I think you came just at that time, we're talking about Orla, and the first 3 years of a fruit tree, the fruit is not permitted. We're talking about this over here, and if you didn't plant it with the intention of eating the fruit, but you planted it with another intention. So another thing, just to move on quickly, and then we'll get on to the next subject, is how the spacing, how close together you plant them. Right? And for example, if you're gonna plant for beams, for wood, because back then they needed the wood, so you prune a lot, and how you prune it, how you plant it, you want it to be upright, very. So there's different ways, and the Gemara talks about all these different things, from just your intention, to the types of species that you plant, to how thick you plant it, and so on and so forth.
In the first 3 years, how effective is any kind of tree going to be as a hedge? I don't know how fast these trees grow, but I wouldn't imagine it's going to be a terrible obstacle to climb over a lemon tree in 3 years.
You're absolutely right. That would not be the point, because there's still enough examples of proof of your intention by how close you plant things together, and you still have to prune the tree in the first year or 2 years. You're still doing, so what kind of pruning are you doing? So all these still, you're right, it's not reached its, you know, effectivity as a hedge yet, but all the activities you do to it and the way you plant so forth will reveal your intention, yeah? Alright guys, very good, that was fun.
So how do we paskin that you have to plant it and prune it?
So we actually paskin that if you, like the Mishnah says, if you don't plant it for its fruit, the Gemara goes into all kinds of things. Well, you know, you plant it partly for, you know, you really want the fruit, but you also want it for the hedge, you know, so on and so forth. It's a very in-depth sugi over there. But we paskin today, like the Mishnah tells us, that if you plant it and you do the things that we talked about now, then the fruit is permitted within the first 3 years, and you don't have to wait your early years, yeah?
So not just with Kamala.
Huh?
Not just with Kamala. But also in a place.
Yeah, yeah. There has to be at least one type of you know, proof. Because by intention alone, we don't go there. Okay, gentlemen, on to the next thing. You mentioned something about Netar Ravai. Before I get to Trumas and Meiser, I'm really sorry, I have a hard time leaving Orla here for a second. But I need to... When I say 3 years, what do you guys think? Is it 3 years? How do you do the counting of those 3 years? Just my luck, right after Tu Bishvat, I'm telling you guys this. Alright. Very nice. So you're telling me basically that if I plant a fruit tree in February, in June, then my counting is from June, wait 3 years till the 3 years later, June?
No. It's from Tu Bishvat to 3 years.
Right. Okay. We need to get into counting here for a second. Anybody decent in math?
We're all Jews.
Okay. Right, so you're all accountants and lawyers and doctors. Okay, right. All right, so you guys got good heads on your shoulders. What I'm about to share with you is very, very important, because, you know, what we're going to do here is we're going to eventually separate Trumas and Meiser from these pomelos. Anybody like pomelos, by the way? Yeah? All right, this is from one of the fruit trees that... I never like taking credit for fruit that comes from any of my gardens, because I don't believe that I did anything except, you know, had a lucky year. I have 26 years of experience growing stuff, but... Really, it's all Kurz Baruch that does it, but it did come from one of the gardens that I take care of. Let's just put it this way.
The Yesh Chesed garden.
What's that?
The Yesh Chesed garden.
He's the Balabai there, Baruch Hashem, is a religious Jew. You're a Shemayim and a big Balach Chesed. Very generous man. So he lets me take. This is with many of my other customers. It's okay, so let's talk about counting. Now, anybody here of Shemitah? Okay, so Shemitah, let's start with Shabbos. How many days is there until Shabbos comes from Motzei Shabbos?
Usually 7.
7 days, right? So Shemitah is the same way. Shabbos, every 7 days is a Shabbos. What's called the Shabbos of the week. Shemitah is the Shabbos of the years. Every 7 years is another 7-year cycle called Shemitah. And it's actually really wonderful. You know, I'm a big fan of Shemitah. You know, I can talk about Shemitah for a long time. In about a month, I'm starting a gardening course for gardeners on, you know, Shemitah. So, endless stuff to say about Shemitah. But one thing we can say, just to try to get a little bit of how I feel across, is, you know, anybody have any something really special that belongs to you? Like, really special. A watch you got for your bar mitzvah or something, or, I don't know. Could be something from you inherited from your grandparents. Everybody has something, right? Now, you just, you know, go to yeshiva and pull it in your pocket. Hey guys, take a look at my watch I got for my bar mitzvah. Yeah, it's a nice Cartier, you know, Rolex. Take a look. Oh, here's my grandfather's, you know, 1900 upside down stamp, you know. Look guys, just keep my pocket. It's worth about $1.5 million. No. You know, you make good friends with somebody, like, you know, come on, I gotta show you something. You go into your room, you have a special place. Turn around for a second, you know. Take it. Listen, dude, I gotta show you something. Take a look at this stamp. So what I'm trying to say is that the more precious something is to you, the more you protect it, the less often you bring it out, the less often you share it. And you only share not with everybody, you share with those who are closest to you. Same with Shemitah. Kosh Baruch Hu gave a Shemitah when? Not every week. Not every month. Not even every year. Every 7 years. This is precious to him. It's so precious that the Gemara tells us that between the destruction of the first temple and the second temple, there was 70 years. The Gemara tells us, why 70 years? You know why 70 years? 70 Shemitahs that the people did not observe during the time of the first temple, Kosh Baruch Hu used it as a punishment against us, that the exile be for 70 years against the 70 Shemitahs. We're talking about something really special, and until only recently, we didn't have the opportunity to observe Shemitah in the land because we weren't really here to do any observing of the Shemitah in the land of Israel until, like, our generation, until, like, now. And this is thousands of years of not observing Shemitah, and all of a sudden we're here in the land and we can observe Shemitah again. Yeah.
The first temple stood for 410 years.
Right.
And if there is a Shemitah year every 7 years...
I knew somebody would do this.
That goes up to a little 50 and a half.
Right. We'll start in Sugya together. You guys are good. All right, so let's get back to Shemitah. So Shemitah every 7 years.
Wait. The temple, it's 410 years since what, King David? Or is that 410 including the prophet?
I'd say the count, exactly, maybe the rabbi would know better. This is not my specialty. And I.
Oh, he has a correct point. It's 410 years since the Bay.
Right, so the we were in the land for a much
longer. We were in the country before the temple.
Right, so I don't know from when the count starts. We'd have to learn the sugi a little bit better.
Plus, you got to double every 50 another yovel.
Right.
Right. So out of 410, you have another 8 yovels.
Okay.
So that you're already at.
Well, seven times seven would be 48. So you're looking at the minus of 70 years. What you're missing out. So that's 10 total that you're negating. Plus the 8 yovels would be your minus 2. If it's from the start of the first temple.
Right, but it's not.
Right. If you encounter, like, the times I'll get the Mishnah at a Shiloh, then it's very nice.
Right. You know what, guys? I appreciate the question so much, and believe it or not, as much as I've asked that to myself, I never actually researched it enough to do the math. Because you guys believe that, I'll do the math, and we'll be in touch, and I'll let you know how it works out. Okay. Back to Shemitah for a second. Every 7 years, of course, Baruch Hu brings us his Shemitah. Which, by the way, you know what the Shemitah is?
Next year?
8 months. 8 months. We waited 6 years in 4 months since the last Shemitah, 8 months begins the next Shemitah. How to behave during this time, what to do and how to do it. This is not for today. Zat Hashem, you guys are welcome. I can come out to Machon Meir, we can talk about it. It's a lot of fun to know how to live during the Shemitah year. How do you eat? What do you eat? What's going on? But Shemitah begins, you know when it begins?
Rosh Hashanah?
Very nice. Rosh Hashanah. Let's get back to counting. When we count the years, we're talking about we count from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, very simply. From Tishrei Aleph to Tishrei Aleph. That's the years. Shemitah ends, the new year begins, it's the first year. Tishrei Aleph comes along, Rosh Hashanah comes along again, and we flip into the, what year is it?
Second.
The second year. The next Rosh Hashanah comes, and what do we do? The third year. And then the fourth, all the way through the cycle. To Shemitah, and then we go back to the first year. And this is how we do the count. Like, you know, the days of the week. Yeah? The same thing. So when we, in order to separate Trumas and Meiser, we need to know how to count. So we just did one form of counting. Let me just go into Trumas and Meiser for a second here. You want to, yeah. I mean, you want to take a break for a few minutes, maybe?
Maybe I'll just bring everyone a drink.
Yeah? All right. Just be very careful that hopefully nothing should spill on the floor. But
what about you? What do you think?
No, I'll be fine. Thank you very much for having me. Okay. Shumas and Meiser. Anybody know anything about Shumas and Meiser whatsoever? Okay, first of all, let me ask you. Okay. You see this page again? Right at the top. We'll take it right to the top now. It says, Klal Amru B'Maisras. Yeah? There's a general principle they said in Maisras, in Tithing. Kol Shehu Ochel V'Nishma V'Gidulav Min Ha'aretz. Chayav B'Maisras. Anything that is edible, that is girded, and that grows from the ground is obligated in Maisras. Is obligated in tithes. So, I have a question for you guys. Are strawberries obligated?
Yes.
It is fruit, right?
What do you mean, what does it mean by garden? Garden by people?
Yes. Garden by people.
Yeah, strawberries would be included.
Yeah. How about tomatoes?
Tomatoes would also be included.
How about chicken?
Mm-hmm.
Chicken would not be included.
They don't grow on trees.
Would
potatoes be included?
What about apple? Potatoes? Why not?
Because they grow on the ground.
Right, so the three things here, it has to be food, has to be guarded, meaning somebody's guarding it, yeah? Versus, what would be the opposite of somebody not guarding it?
Wild.
Wild. Nice. Right, exactly. Unguarded, wild, ownerless, let's call it. And the third thing is, it has to be grown in the ground. Yeah, it's a growth from the ground. So,
it's not mushrooms.
What do we say about chicken again? Is chicken high in Maestrias?
No.
What about apples?
Yeah.
Butter?
No.
Salt?
No.
Lettuce?
Yes.
How about seaweed?
No.
Why?
Because of the sea.
It's not guarded.
Hold on a second. But seaweed can grow from the ground of the sea, right?
But seaweed wouldn't necessarily grow.
And is it edible? Is seaweed edible?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Well, where does seaweed grow in RCSA?
In the waters, right off of the shores.
But is that considered arts?
So let me tell you something. The Gemara says that there's a certain distance out into the ocean, to the Mediterranean, that's still considered part of the land of Eretz Yisrael. And the truth is, seaweed would otherwise be obligated in Trumas and Meiser, except for one little point. The second one. V'nishma. You said very nicely, I said, what's the opposite of guarded? Wild. So if it's wild, it's not obligated, because it has to be guarded. Seaweed, is it a guarded thing, or is it considered wild and ownerless?
What if you have a fish?
Totally, nobody owns it. Who owns seaweed in the ocean? Nobody.
What if you open, like, say, off the beach of Tel Aviv with a little fish aquarium that it's an enclosed, fenced-off area where you have fish and you grow some seaweed in there? And maybe a side business, you cut off the seaweed.
You ask a good question? Look, Nimesh, you ask a good question.
What is a seaweed special thing?
Bleed Nether, I'll find out, and I have two things to report back to you guys on, okay? Yeah.
If they have like a lake, or even if it was like man-made, does that also count as Eretz Yisrael? Like the water in there? Like if you somehow grew
maybe
or something?
Yes, it is. If it's in the land of Israel, even if it's growing in the land of the soil of the lake, then it would be. If it's growing in the water, like what grows just in water, guys?
Water lilies.
The food that we eat. Very common food that we eat.
The rice?
Sprouts grows in soil. Yeah, we all love sprouts. I used to grow 8 varieties of sprouts until I got married. And then oh, I said, get that stuff out of this.
That's how it still grows.
So, sprouts. Are they obligated to trim some miser?
No.
So, this gets into very fine, nitty-gritty halachic inquiries. Technically speaking, they are without a bracha for a different reason, not just because they grow in water, because they're most of the time grown indoors. Yeah, this very complex and in-depth analysis and of what is obligated in Trumas and Maaser and to what degree and so on and so forth. But that's not for today. My point was, how about mushrooms, guys?
It grows on the Gemara Brachot. It says it's not loyal neck.
Right. So even if you cultivate it, and even though it's called food, but because of the composition of the mushroom, which is actually a mycelium, and the mushroom itself is actually the flower of the body of the plant, it doesn't actually yonek, it doesn't actually feed from the earth itself. So whenever you buy mushrooms, even though you have a heksher on it, they're not obligated to trumas and maaser.
Why do they need actually then?
Other reasons for production and different salt. I said salt doesn't need that. Salt, technically speaking, is not high in terms of mice. There's a lot of issues with production and so on and so forth. Bom chatur adinoy lo hayin melech olam shehav kol niya bidaro. How about maple syrup?
So Canadian.
No, because it doesn't...
To bring in the Canadian.
It doesn't grow. Maple tree, right? It's a sap, isn't it?
Yeah. So, believe it or not, this is also a very complex halachic question, but practically speaking, it's not. For a different reason, also, it doesn't grow in Eretz Yisrael. Because the other thing is that Trumas and Maaser is only obligated on stuff, like I said, that's food, that's garden, and that grows from the ground, but in the ground of Eretz Yisrael. If it comes or grows in as far away place as even Jordan or Lebanon, then it's not obligated in Trumas and Maaser.
Wait, so you're saying, if you're in Chutz La'aretz, I mean, you can go to a supermarket and buy apples and eat them.
No problem.
So why can't you go out and eat mushrooms?
Where?
In the supermarket. What's up? You said it needs an extra.
Yeah, it needs a hechsher. Because of production issues.
Mushrooms could have some kind of hechsher problem in Chutz La'aretz?
I'm not a bucky in mushroom growth, in mushroom production, but it's always better to buy with a hechsher, primarily because the production, the modern day production can contain all kinds of different mixtures. You know, machinery is used in all kinds of different ways, and they have to grease it up, and they have different types of production lines, and, you know, cleaning it, and there's always, for example, you look at some packages, you say, may contain, you ever see that little like fine print, may contain peanuts and soya and this and that. So, all food may, so, it's very important that a good mashgiach that's guarding, you know, the quality of the food in terms of kashrus will have to make sure that change of production lines, certain non-kosher elements don't get mixed into a kosher production line. So it could be that the food itself is not obligated, but we still want to make sure that the way it comes to us in a permitted fashion, not in a forbidden fashion. Okay, let's get back to counting. So we count from Tishrei to Tishrei, yeah? Okay. Trumas and Miser. Let's do something else for just a second before we actually separate Trumas and Miser. Let's talk about the gifts. We'll get to counting in the end because it can get a little complicated. Let's talk about the gifts. Anybody know what kind of, when we say separate Trumas and Miser, when we say separate something out of the fruit, do you know what we're separating?
The Kohen of the door.
To the ladies.
Right, okay, great. You guys.
And then also for us,
the poor people.
Right.
Depending on the year.
Basically, you guys got it covered. Kohen, Levi, Asim to the poor person, depending on the year. And basically, a much better shiur than I could ever give. Because that's exactly how you sum up Trumas and Miser. The first gift, let's talk about 100 apples. Alright, now I'll need you guys to focus and concentrate. Anybody are mathematicians in the room, then you can just blurt out the numbers. We have 100 apples. The Torah tells us the first gift has to go to the Kohen. The first gift is called Truma Gedola. Truma Gedola, the Torah tells us, can be any amount. The rabbis established an amount. One every 50, one every 60, one every 40, depending if you're a kind of a cheap person, or if you're a very generous person, or if you're an average person, it's one in 50. But let's say you're going to give one apple to the Kohen. Truma Gedola now is one of them. How many apples do we have left?
99.
99. Very nice. The next thing we have to separate out is called Miser Rishon. Miser Rishon goes to the Levite. That is 10% of what remains. Anyone want to risk the calculation?
9.9
apples. 9.9 apples.
Do you round to 10 or you just keep it at 9?
With which gift?
The latter.
The Meister Rishon?
Yeah.
You can round.
Up, down?
Never down. Yeah, never down.
So let's say we give them 10 apples.
Okay. Let's say you give 10 apples. So how many do we have left?
89.
Okay, now somebody said that you give to yourself, right? The person who grew it. But then somebody else said, I think it was you, depending on the year. Let's get to the years now. The years are a 7-year cycle. So here we go. The first year, the second year, the fourth year, and the fifth year are what called Miser Sheni years. Miser Sheni. How many apples do we have left?
89.
Miser Sheni is 10% of what remains goes to who?
Us.
All goes to us. After all that stuff, it still goes to us. No. Miser Sheni is a very special mitzvah from the Torah. Because Miser Sheni goes to us, but we have to eat it in Jerusalem. So we live in Tiberias, or Tel Aviv. And we have Miser Sheni from something we grew in our garden.
Does it still apply today?
We have to separate Miser Sheni today. But I'll explain to you just in a moment how we do it today and how they did it even back then. If you live in Tiberias and you got to bring figs, anybody know how long, what kind of a shelf life figs have?
Pretty long, right?
Fairly short.
A couple days if you're lucky before the worms get to it. Now, I live in Tiberias. How much time is it going to take me to walk to Jerusalem to eat those figs? But what's going to rot first? What's going to give up first? The figs or am I getting to Jerusalem? The figs will never make it to Jerusalem. So the Torah tells, okay, there's got to be another way. So there is another way. What is called, you take the fruit and you redeem the value of the fruit onto a coin. Now, coin is nice because a coin, first of all, has an endless lifespan. And secondly, is I'm not in any rush to get to Jerusalem just today because I'm in the middle of my harvest, and you know I'm going to go to Jerusalem for the rego, for the holidays, but that's you know a couple months from now. So it's great. Torah tells what you could do is you have Maaser Sheni, you redeem it onto a coin, the value of the Maaser Sheni, let's say it's 3 shekel. And you take then 3 shekels, you put it aside, you say a statement, which we'll say when we separate Jewish and Maaser, Bezat Hashem, and you can take the Kedusha, what's called the holiness, the sanctity, of out of the fruit by your words, and put it onto this coin.
Don't we add a fifth too?
Yes, we add a fifth. Not in every case, but we add a fifth. Depending if it's yours, if you're doing it for a friend, if it's on your coin or not on your coin. Bezat Hashem, after Shemitah, I'm 80% through a book in Trumas and Meiser. It's a question, answer, question, answer. If you guys are still here, and I'm still around, and I published it, then you guys can get bring a couple copies to Chol Mir. It contains all these questions and answers. So you take the sanctity out of the produce and you put it into the coin. Now great, your coin now has sanctity called Maaser Sheni, and when you're ready to go to Jerusalem, you go to Jerusalem, and there you have to spend it on food and drink, and you have to eat it in ritual purity, meaning you have to be tahor. You can't be tuma or impure. And today, by the way, we're all impure. Ritually, we're all impure because we don't have the red heifer. I don't know if you guys know anything about this stuff, but we don't have the red heifer, so we can't become ritually pure. So we're all ritually impure. Yes.
When you're talking about putting the holiness on a coin, you mean enough coins to buy that amount of produce?
Enough coins to buy enough coins that will equal the value of the portion of Maaser Sheni. Yes. So, for example, let's say, how much Maaser Sheni did we say? We said it's 10% Maaser Sheni of what remains. So how many remained? We took out Truma Gedola, which we took out 1. We had 99. Then we took out 10% of 99, which came to 9.9, which we rounded off to 10 for the Levite, right?
80
left. Came to 80, 89. Then we take 10% of that, which we have?
80.
Very nice. So nine
harvest, that would be, you know, could be thousands of shekels worth of stuff. So not one coin, but tons of
them. So what you're asking is like this. We basically came down to about 20% of 100 apples, which is about 20 apples. You're saying to me, hold on a second here. I'm a farmer. I don't produce 100 apples. I produce 1,000 tons of apples. And you're telling me, my 1,000 tons of apples, I gotta take 200 tons and just write it off? Bye bye. No way. You know what, guys? This is real life situation. This is real life situation going on here.
I just don't understand how they're supposed to eat that much food in Jerusalem. They have 200 tons of apples.
So you asked a very, very practical question that has deep ramification in today's society here in Eretz Yisrael, and I will answer that question very shortly, okay? Because it's a very important question. And rabbis like Rabbi Efrati and others who are trying to get big growers separate Trumas and Maaser, we come across this problem, but we have solutions to them, so we will discuss them shortly. Okay. We came down to Maaser Sheni, which we said is in the first, second, fourth, and fifth years. Now, the third and the sixth years, right now we're in the sixth year, because like I said, we're 8 months before Shemitah, we're in the sixth year. There's another type of Maaser that's called Maaser Ani. It goes to the poor. So instead of Maaser Sheni, it's Maaser Ani. It's 10%. So we're down still to 80 apples in total that we've taken out, that we have left. The last 8.9 apples in the third, sixth year, which is now where the sixth year, goes to a poor person. And we're sitting happy. Now, the produce before you do this process is called Tevel. Tevel means that it's produce that has been untithed. You have not separated Trumas and Maaser from it. And it's forbidden to eat like pig. It's forbidden to eat like pig. You can't eat pig, you can't eat... Right now, for example, if you eat this, it's like you're eating pig. No difference. Okay. Nobody wants that. Or any other negative commandment from the Torah. So this is called Tevel. Tevel Vadai. By the way, today it's very hard to find Tevel Vadai. Because when you go to the store, everything's been separated out. Sometimes two, three, four times. Everything, you know, you guys are well protected when you go buy stuff from almost anywhere. But when you grow your own stuff in your own garden, you take from the fruit of the trees, then you have Tevel Vadai. This is serious stuff. So we have to do what we're going to do shortly, which is separate Trumas and Maaser. And we have to know how to count the years. Because like I said, this could be a Maaser Sheni, or this could be a Maaser Ani. There's a big difference. If it's a Maaser Sheni, it comes to me, and I got to deal with that. But if it's a Maaser Ani, it goes to poor people. And I got to do it right. So I have to know how to count. That's very, very important. And I got to know when to count. And that's, yeah.
When was that picked?
This was picked... What day are we doing?
Thursday.
Monday.
And Tu B'Shvat was?
The pomelo?
Yeah.
Pomelo is not like Pri Adar.
No?
It's a zana to itself. It's not like lemon, for example.
It's not like lemon.
I'm
going to order the pizza here. Because by the time we end here, we're not going to make any pizza chef.
I mean, we'll be done probably in about 15 minutes.
Right.
20 minutes or so.
Until we get the pizza chef, it's at midnight.
Are you guys holding on okay? I mean, I'm sorry. You came to learn 1/6 of all of Torah. It's not something we can do exactly in 20 minutes. But, you know, we're doing a pretty good job.
So I figure we're going to go out. We'll save that for... Anyways, after the department didn't end up coming tonight.
Okay.
So we'll save that either for another week.
I would just have our own pizza party.
I could order it there, but I figure why not eat it here? By the time you get back...
Bring it over here. So it wouldn't be the first time a group ordered pizza here. In fact,
yeah,
it is.
Rabbi Frati told me to order it here.
Yeah. Order it here.
Seven. So
I'll
eat here. Okay.
Sure.
I'm ordering slice for you.
I'll have a slice. As long as there's no pepperoni on there.
Get that in Vassar. Pizza pepperoni. Hashem Madrid. Really, true story.
So you guys catch my drift? Why you need to know how to count? Because if not, you can make a serious mistake and give out the Maaser Ani or Maaser Sheni not in the right place. Okay, let's just go back to counting again for a second. When I say that you count from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, that's what changes the years over. But what establishes the obligation on fruits or vegetables? Yeah?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Say, okay, we gotta take Trumas and Maaser from this, right?
Yeah.
Would it be acceptable to instead of just like cutting off, say, like, you know, 20% of the fruit, just to weigh the fruit, and let's say 20% of the weight is, you know, the peel, or 10% of the weight is the peel, and you're kind of just adding a little extra.
Right.
Is that acceptable?
That's preferred. It's not acceptable, it's preferred. It's the most preferred, by the way. And the Mishnah tells us also the different ways to measure the tithing obligations. And weighing is the most preferred. Yeah.
Tu B'Shvat.
Back to Tu B'Shvat. Back to Tu B'Shvat. Yeah.
You're saying about not having to worry too much about Tevel. What about those mini markets that you get all over the city that have no Heksher on their store whatsoever?
Right.
But you know, they'll have some like stuff with Heksherim on it. They'll have some stuff without Heksherim on it.
And they don't have a Tildat Kashrut.
They don't have a Tildat Kashrut. You can buy what you want, you don't buy what you don't want, and they have a fruit stand.
Right.
Can you buy fruit from them? Or if you buy fruit from them, you have to do...
Okay.
Fresh, or
is it tomorrow?
You guys are asking great questions. The subject of Trumas and Maaser is massive. And every one of your questions is a real sugya unto itself. It's a whole discussion unto itself. In short, I can give you an answer, but it won't.
I've a few times. I'd like some practical.
Right. So I'll give you the answer without getting into the grit of why I'm saying what I'm saying. Is if it comes when it comes to fruit, better not to buy. When it comes to vegetables, you can buy, but you have to separate chumas and maaser without a brocha. That's the answer, in short. And is it considered demai? It, not in the classic sense, but it's considered perhaps suffik tevel.
What is demai? Suffik tevel.
The translation is like, what is this? Yeah, that's the translation. Yeah, literally, demai. What is this? We don't know if it's been trumas and maaser been separated from it, not separated from it. We don't know where it's holding halachically, where it's standing. So, yeah.
As long as you would separate trumas and maaser from the fruit, why would that be any different than vegetables?
Right. Very again, another good question. There's a difference between fruits and vegetables in that there are many. Fruits, you have issues with orla, which you don't have by vegetables. For example, anybody ever see a pomegranate grow? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So pomegranates, like plums, tend to do what's called suckering. Suckering is that the base of the trunk sends out new shoots all the time. Now, what happens is that it's very important because there are in Hilchos Orla, that if these new shoots come from underneath the ground, meaning you don't see it come out of the side of the trunk, but you see it coming from underneath the ground, then it's as if it's a new tree, and even if its parent tree is 10 years old, and you have a new sprout coming from underneath the ground, right next to the trunk, you know it's coming from this tree, but it's coming from under the ground, this new sucker is you have to have count more leaves.
Is that correct or
not? This issue?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm asking you because I don't.
Yes, yes.
Why could they do it?
So, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. If a sucker that comes from underneath the ground is forbidden. Ba'alanan, or if it's forbidden from the Torah. But in any case, it is forbidden in that you have to count all the years of the same tree. So a lot of the production of pomegranates, with thousands of trees in these fields, you have serious problems of. And what do you think of the farmer cares? He doesn't care.
Dig a little bit and expose it. That's above the ground. I just happen to be moving my spade around. Hey, look, it's above the ground.
Right. So you're asking good questions, and the answers are not so simple about that. And if you're looking to gain, as a farmer, the 10 pomegranates from those branches that are coming from under the ground, you have to go and you have to make sure that, oh my God, the Mashkiach, he's a surprise visit. You know, you got to run 1,000 trees to clear away. You know, it's not done, practically speaking. Let's put it this way. If it is done at all, it's a whole different issue, yeah? So there's lots of these problems. So when it comes to fruit, so you have other problems, not just trumas and maaser, you have problems of orla, and we never got into kilei hakerem before. There's another kilei that we never got into, which is also very complex when it comes to talks about vineyards, which also have issues of, if you're buying grapes, kilei hakerem as well, like the kileim of the grapevine. So, but with fruit, with vegetables, you have none of this. None of these issues. It's just a matter of was trumas and maaser separated from it or not. So in this case, then if you go to one of these stores, better not if you can avoid it. Meaning, if you have a store here that has like a Badatz or a Mahajan Hekshar, and one guy here who looks kind of shady character, he has a few fruit and vegetables outside. You know, obviously, you know. Go to the guy with the Hekshar, you've got to pay a couple of groshim more.
This is Arab, right? Because Arab, I think, that he doesn't need children.
Right, so another issue, another halacha is that the produce has to be grown on the land that belongs to the Jew and not to the non-Jew. So, in which case, then, if an Arab owns a field in Eretz Yisrael, and he grows produce, whether it's fruits or vegetables, and then he sells it to you directly, or he sells it to a packing house. Because, you know, today, the farmer doesn't sell to the, you know, your little McCall doesn't come in. Let's just say 99.9% of the time it won't happen, you know? Here in Israel, things can still happen. But, you know, it doesn't happen that way. He has thousands of tons of tons of hundreds of tons or tons of whatever produce it is he's growing, and he sells it to a distributor. Packing house, Tnuva, Reishis, and we've probably seen them written on the sides of boxes. And they, after that, they have their customers, which is, you know, Supersol, and the little Makolet, and Ramema, and then another one there. And they start to distribute, and it's a whole system. So, if the Arab sells you directly his fruit, and you know for sure that he owns the field, that's very important, you know for sure he owns his field, and this is very common. What happens? You guys ever ban his money? You go up to the north, or you go traveling a little bit, and you want to see the land, you know, and all of a sudden it's watermelon season, it's strawberry season. You see this guy, Arab, on the side of the road selling some, you know, nice looking strawberries. You want to buy, bottom line, you know, you want to buy this stuff. Can you buy this stuff? So these are all excellent questions and real life situations, and you just have to wait for the book to come out to get an answer.
If you're in that makolet again and you see that the apples are in a box, which is bracelet, or right, even individually every apple has a sticker on it,
right,
can you then assume that it's probably okay because you know that bracelet is a packing house?
Right. So again, these are all little proofs, so to speak, that most likely it traveled through a packing house, and there in the packing house, the head rabbi, Mashkiach, he separates Shumas and Maaser. Yes, you can. Still, many people in such situations would separate Shumas and Maaser, what's called, willingly, even from Benatz Heksher, for other reasons as well. There's other problems. Again, this is, like I said, it's a big subject, but let's get back to just the counting for a second. When we said, how do we count, right, the difference between fruits and vegetables, so when we pick fruits or vegetables, the counting goes according to the time you pick. So I have a tomato plant, right, this is the use of a tomato plant, for example. 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah of this last year was the fifth year, right? Because Rosh Hashanah came and we said now it's the sixth year, and then in 8 months it's the Shemitah year, right? So this last Rosh Hashanah that passed 4 or 5 months ago flipped from the fifth year to the sixth year, right? The fifth year we said was an obligation. Every year you have to separate Truma Gedola. Every year you have to separate Maaser Rishon. And only on the first, second, fourth, and fifth years you have to separate Maaser Sheni. And the third and the sixth year is Maaser Ani. So the fifth year tomato is going to be obligated in what?
Sheni.
Maaser Sheni. Very nice. Rosh Hashanah comes. It's now the sixth year.
Ani.
The same tomato plant. You pick before Rosh Hashanah, it's obligated in Maaser Sheni. You pick after, it's obligated in Maaser Ani. Between the fifth and sixth years, and the third, second and third years, right? With fruit, it's a different count. Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat is like the Rosh Hashanah of the trees. What does it mean? It doesn't go after when you pick the fruit. It goes after what's called Chanata. Chanata is the point at which, it's a machlokas, but to keep things practical, it's a point when the petals fall off and the little fruit emerges. Let's call that point Chanata. So whenever Chanata happened, if it happened before Tu Bishvat, meaning now, was Tu Bishvat last week? Yeah? 2 weeks ago? Then it was the fifth year. Right? Now Tu Bishvat comes, we move into the sixth year. We're counting now the years a little differently. One counting is from Tishrei Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, Tishrei Aleph, Tishrei Aleph. Another counting is from Tu Bishvat to Tu Bishvat. The Tishrei Aleph count is important for vegetables more. The Tubishvat count of the years is more important for fruit.
What much as a fruit, actually.
Right. We'll call them vegetable.
I thought vegetables don't actually really exist, in a way.
It's another discussion. So, for example, these pomelos, when do you think Hanukkah happened?
Before Tubishvat.
Thank you. Before Tubishvat, very nice. So, if it happened before Tubishvat, what are we obligated to separate from them?
Sheni.
Very nice. Beautiful. You guys are great. This hard stuff, really hard stuff, and you guys, I think, got it. These will have to separate Maaser Sheni from. Now, we are in Yerushalayim now. Remember I said before, Maaser Sheni is something that you have to take the fruit and eat in Yerushalayim? Except for the fact that what?
That we're not ritually pure.
Right. And unless we're ritually pure, we can eat them. Unless if we're not ritually pure, even if we're in Yerushalayim, we can't eat them. Which means what? In our time, we're forced to redeem it onto a coin. And even that coin, which contains the sanctity of the Maaser Sheni that's in this fruit, we can't spend it. Because if we're spending it, it's like we're eating something that has sanctity of Maaser Sheni, and we can't do that because we're not ritually pure. So what do? We have an obligation to do what's called biur, which is get rid of that coin, Pesach of the fourth year, and Pesach of the seventh year. Something else. Let's get back to here.
Wait, so we just throw the coin out?
You have to destroy it. The Gemara tells us to the Dead Sea, or what I do with I take my drill, and I just drill a hole into the coin. It has to be such that it becomes non-usable for commerce. Yeah.
Wouldn't you be able to purchase sugar with that coin, and then scatter it to the wind?
You can do that. You can do that.
It's a lot of sugar.
You can do that.
Why? It's not a big coin. It's... But they're not a small volume.
You can do that, but not for biur. Because the coin has a certain amount of, like, how much can you redeem onto a shekel coin? Like, how much times can you take your Maaser Sheni? I have, let's say, in my garden, I have some fruit trees, so I have what's called teva, untithed produce. And I keep, I have my coin, right? My special coin that I wrapped up with a piece of sellotape and I put, you know, Maaser Sheni on and I wrote. I keep redeeming onto that coin. How many times can I redeem before the coin gets filled up with the sanctity of Maaser Sheni? Like I said, this is very complex stuff. So, we say that in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, you said before, you have to redeem the value of those 9 apples that we use as an example, whatever those 9 apples are worth, we have to take the equivalent in money, and bring it to Yerushalayim, right? But today we don't do that. Because we can't eat it, and because the money is useless to us, so we do what's called, we redeem a pruta's worth of Maaser Sheni onto a coin. What's a pruta worth today? Pruta is 1/40th of the value of an ounce of silver. Follow that. I thought this is complex stuff, guys. So when you redeem tevel, stuff that's been untithed, onto a Maaser Sheni coin, you have, let's say, 1 shekel. Today, the value of silver has gone down considerably in the last half year or so. It's about 9 agurot is the value of a pruta, approximately. So how many times can you redeem onto a shekel if it's 9 agurot?
About 10 times.
Right, 11 times, right? Let's keep it safe, 10 times. Then the coin's filled. You can't redeem, you have to start a new coin. What you can do is that you can redeem it onto something else, except for the pruta's worth inside, that's the initial single value, and you can redeem the rest of it onto another type of produce and then get rid of that produce. Because at the end of the day, the coin is worth something to us. We want to reuse the same coin over and over again. So we here in the base magic, we have something that's called Keren HaMeisris. Keren HaMeisris is a fund that's set up. There are over 60,000 families that are members of this fund. And it's called Keren HaMeisris, which is the fund for the redemption of Meisr Sheni. Now, I got permission today, for you, on behalf of you guys, to be able to use the coins there, because we're going to separate Trumas and Meisr. And hey, we just said before that this is Meisr Sheni. Well, where are we getting a coin from? We need a coin. We don't want to start a coin. It can be a little dangerous because there's a lot of laws pertaining to that coin. So we don't want to get confused of anything. So this organization that we have here called Keren HaMeisris, they took care of all the complex stuff for us. We become members, and whenever we have anything we want to redeem Meisr Sheni, we say a certain script that they wrote on our behalf, and voila, away we go. It's done. It's fantastic. It's a great, great service that we provide. I'm telling you. I was just saying to the guys that Ben Velasco was writing about the Trumas and Meisr. It's a shut. It's a question and answer. And the portion of Meisr Sheni and the coin and redemption is the biggest section. It's very complex. Believe me, I know the halachas. I can make my own coins. I don't do that anymore. I'm a member of Keren HaMeisris. Thank you very much. I don't have to deal with any of that stuff.
You know, if that's Meisr Sheni or Meisr Ani, you have to know how old that pomela tree, whatever, was before it was picked, right?
You have to know when Chanat happened, when that point, when the flower, so for example.
So you know how long it takes before it becomes that size or whatever.
So this, for example, the Chanat happened after Tubish, quite a bit of time after last Tubishvat. Yeah. So I'm not too worried about it.
Not a week, I mean, it's not like a week.
Last two Mishra from a year and a couple days ago.
This is the second.
But we have serious problems. You know what's in flower and fruit right now? You know what's coming into. You guys know Shesek? You heard of Shesek?
No.
It's that loquat. It's that orange fruit that'll be in the market probably in about a month and a half.
Loquat?
Yeah, it's a loquat. So I have on my phone in some of my gardens. A picture of loquat clusters of little fruit and flowers. We just had to be Shvat. So part of the cluster had Chanata before to be Shvat. And part of the cluster had Chanata after to be Shvat. Complex. Lemons do the same thing. So there's ways to deal with it practically speaking, but not for now. Yeah? Okay. One more thing before we get on to separating Trumas and Meisr, and that is Meisr Rishon. When the Levi gets his part, this is a pyramid structure here. We all got to take care of the Kohen. He got how many apples, did we say? The first gift was Truma Gedola, which goes to the Kohen, which he said was one apple. We left with 99. The next gift was going to the Levite, which is called Meisr Rishon, which is 10% of what remains. We said we're going to give him 10, right? From his 10, he has to now give 10% back to the Kohen. How many is that?
That's
9. 10% of 10?
One.
In total, all these fruit, how many actually ended up in the Kohen's hands?
1. 2.
Very nice. 2. The Truma Gadol, the first thing we took off from the 100, which is that 1. And then the portion that the Levite got, he gave 10% of the 10, which is 1. In end, the Kohen got 2 apples. Practically speaking, this gets back into the question that you started before with, how does it work with a farmer that grows 20,000 tons of apples? Like, taking off 20% is a lot. Practically speaking, this is what happens today. The only portion that we actually have to remove is the portions that go to the Kohen. Because that's called Mamon Gevulah. That's already called stuff that has so much sanctity that we can't use it. We can't have any benefit from it. We must separate it out from here. So, in the end, only that portion has to be actually separate. So, when we go back to our example of 100 apples, how many apples do we say go to the Kohen in the end?
Two.
In the end of the day, all we really have to separate out are two apples. So that goes back to the modern day question. What about a farmer that grows tens of thousands of tons of something? How does he deal with taking up 20% total of that? Well, he doesn't have to. All he has to really take out is whatever portion would be designated to the Kohen, that's what he has to take out, which is, in practical purposes, I said to you earlier on that the first portion, which is called Truma Gadol, which goes to the Kohen, has to be, according to the Torah, any amount. It can be one grain of wheat from 100,000 tons of wheat. And you have fulfilled your obligation.
So you have to give him 1% in total then?
You have to give him a little bit more than 1%. Which, when we get to the script of separate Trumas and Maaser, that's exactly how it starts. Hayoser mi'echad mi'mea. The little bit more than 1%, which we actually have to separate out, we don't give to a Kohen today, by the way. So if there's a Kohen in the room, I have to, on behalf of Kodesh Baruch Hu, apologize. You are also considered Tamei, and so you cannot benefit from Truma. In 99.97.
So we just put it into money and then break the money?
Okay. But we have Maaser Sheni here. You want to ask something?
So everyone is obligated to give 1%, so slightly more than 1% from that Truma Gadol.
Right.
What the Levi receives, he's supposed to give 10% of that. It's like a special thing.
Right.
The 10% of the 10%.
The thing is that you're getting to the next point is that the Levi gets 10%. So that Maaser Rishon, which he's supposed to get, we actually don't have anything to do.
Do we take it for ourselves?
Yep, take it ourselves. We'll do it. Thank you very much. Can you prove your levy? Prove it. A Kohen, we believe. A levy, we don't believe. He has to prove it. He has to prove he's a levy. And he can't do it today. And besides the fact that Maaser Rishon is not called Mamon Gevulah. It's Mamon Hedyon. It has a level of sanctity that's free for all. Anyone can benefit from it. Yeah? So between these two things, we don't have to give Maaser Rishon. We don't give. But the little portion inside the Maaser Rishon that's called for the Kohen, which is actually called Trumas Maaser, we do have to separate out. So the script, when we separate Trumas and Maaser, is designed in such a way that we do that and the first separation altogether once, which is called a little bit more than 1%. And what about Maaser Sheni? That's another 10%. Well, what do we do with that? Well, 10%, in our days, we do not have to separate out 10%. We just redeem it. And how much do we redeem before we set a pruta? So we can redeem 100,000 tons of apples for 8 agurot. The value of 1/40 the ounce of silver. Very simplified. Far from what the Torah would have intended in real rich times in the nation, but very much still part of what the Torah anticipated in our times. Everything that I said now is also from the Torah. It has accommodated even the difficult times in Israel. So, let's move on to actually separate Trumas and Maaser. The wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just still in the shiur. I'm almost finished. I'm still giving a shiur. Can I call you back shortly? Okay, thank you. I know this is not a shiur Shalom Bias, but trust men in the right thing. Alright, I need 1, 2, 3, 4 volunteers. One. Alright, anybody know how to juggle? Here's one for you.
Yeah,
you know how to
juggle.
Pretty
good.
No. Alex knows how to juggle. One for you.
Bang!
Okay. Let's get a knife and let's open these up. Because I want each one of you to actually separate. Should we do that in the right way? Or should
you separate?
No, I'm going to separate. You know what? How about this? Let's keep things... You guys want to separate yourselves? I'll tell you something. I'll be honest with you. It's a big mitzvah. If you want to separate yourselves, then by all means, we'll have to take portions of these pamelas and do it. If you want the rabbi to do it on behalf of all of us here, then you can do it. I'm not going to do it. So, you guys decide for a second. I'm going to take out the script.
Yeah, it sounds good.
That smells nice. Anybody really want to separate from themselves?
Yeah, I don't want to.
I'm going to use the first.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right, guys. Let's do it like this. How about this? Let's get maybe whoever has the fruit. Why don't you guys separate? And if it's okay, we'll do this another time and get the other guys to separate another time. Only because it could take some time, and I don't want to, you know, I want to try to expedite things a little bit.
Let's let one person do it. You still have to get home.
Yeah.
The pizza's going to be here another day.
Okay.
Let's one person will do it.
I say we'll let Jakob do it.
I say we'll let Jakob do it.
Yeah, it's a restroom for him.
Okay.
Someone
else.
I say we'll let
Jakob
do it. Yeah?
One person. Say that.
Okay.
If
Jakob doesn't
hold on to that.
Jakob should do it.
Okay. So let's open one of the pomeros. No, who wants to open one?
With a knife or
Jakob, do
with a knife or rip open, do it with your hands. You already get your knife, guys?
I know. Alright, I will open mine.
Oh, here, we can always
use it. Right. Boom, it's open.
Okay, so how much are we actually going to have to take out here?
11%.
A little bit more than 1%.
1%.
That's it. We must take out a little bit more than 1%. Question, guys. Is the peel considered a little bit more than 1%? Can I just take a part of the peel?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
That's your answer.
What?
You can't eat the peel.
The peels aren't edible?
No.
Well, ours is the peel.
But you said before that you could.
What?
When I said, you know, we were talking about weight, and I said, you know, could I take the peel and use it as part of the weight? And you said, yeah.
Yeah. That's the difference. That's something else. Because at the end of the day, think about it. If you have 100 pounds of apples, of oranges, just because for a thicker peel, right? 100 pounds of oranges, your ratio is all the same. Whatever portion of meat is in there is the same portion of flesh that's in there, so you got to take out, you know, whatever it is.
So then,
smile.
Your ratios are the same.
I'm saying, what would you be able to use? Was it the Meister Shane that you could use the peel for, or was it just the Meister?
No, when all of it.
You cannot use a peel for any of it.
No, you can include when you separate Truma Meister on large quantities by weight.
Uh-huh.
You have tens of thousands of oranges. So you need to separate a little bit more than 1% of those oranges. So you take out 150 oranges, all of it, everything, with the skin, the peel, everything. You just take out, because everything's ratio. Because whatever's in the other pile that's going to be allowed to you also has a peel on it. So...
Okay.
Yeah?
Maybe we should take this to a
peel
spot.
That's not very
appealing. Okay, so, guys, one second. So we got to take out a little bit more than 1%. Why don't you know? We have a consensus.
Only on that or on all of them?
No, just on this. Why don't you guys decide, based on what you see, and we're doing it according to what's called visual...
That one's big. Is this 1%? That's
probably, that's borderline. Is it according to weight or volume?
It's, in this case, according to whatever looks like a little bit more than 1%. Put it this way. Why don't we take out a whole... a whole slice,
That's
huh?
The answer.
Okay,
hold this for a second, because it's going to fall. Check in more than a second.
Great. Who's doing Yaakov?
Sorry.
What? You decided not to? Okay, Rabbi, come on.
Let's look at that.
Huh?
Okay.
Listen, this is what we're going to do. I need you to do... You'll do the separation. I need you to take each of the pamelas. I need you to do a mice kinyan. I need you to acquire them for yourself.
But that's what I asked. Are we being mafish all of them or one of them?
You were doing your mafish on all of them.
Ah, so he took 1% off of that one. That's why he marked that 1%.
Yeah, that's fine. We have to take one, a little bit more 1% from the fruit in total.
Right, so I'm saying he calculated 1% of... This is 1% of all four?
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. A little bit more 1% of all... Oh, that's why he took off...
yeah.
Little, yeah.
Okay.
I know, I still think... what do you guys think? Just a little bit more 1% of all the fruit that's here?
That's four fruit. I think I should take off another...
Go for it.
Not in weight, but in volume.
Go for it. Take off another one.
Boom.
Great. Rabbi, please grab each one. Do my skin in halva. Just do a halva. You acquired. The halva, you acquired. Yes. It's a privilege.
Yeah.
I know a lot of rabbis on the sword that actually came to the Eretz Israel in the early days. They actually cried the first time they said the Jewish advice of the Brahma. They actually shed tears. It was such a holy, special experience. And also, do my skin in on this as well as on the portion that's going to be. Shulam Gadol and Shulam Smeiser together for the Kohen.
One of the reasons that I'm doing it, not you guys, because you have to understand what you're doing. So I'm just saying Egypt. So you got to understand the words. And because of the timing, you don't have time to go through each word so you understand what you're saying as you're saying it. Get in our school, they explain what you're doing, and then you can do it. For those of you who haven't finished the gear process, you can do it after you finish the gear process.
Okay, great.
Now we also put the fruits together.
Yes.
Okay.
Had me start, so this could be on the same chair as fine.
Okay.
Good. Okay, so now this
one. If they call with the pizza, someone else answer.
Sorry, we're just separate from the semicer.
Where's the phone?
And Mr. Pizza Man, your pizza is not high in Jewish semicer. At least the cheeseburger. Thank you, Rita's. Guys, separate from the semicer. Okay, here we go. This is what you're going to do. You're going to first of all say the bracha of Lavafish from the semicer. Then you're going to say Hayoter Yechalinea all the way until you get to right over here. You do not need to say Kol Min Almino wherever you see it after each of the portions. Then, if you do say it, it doesn't disrupt. Then you say the portion, the bracha on Pidur and Meiser Sheni, because as we said, this is Meiser Sheni, this stuff. So then,
this doesn't fall under
after that, you say, this one here. See this?
Right.
Now, once he says this and he finishes the nusach, the script, what was forbidden to us before, like pig, now becomes permitted to us, like
Pamela. Do I have to hold it in my hand when I say it?
No.
Okay, maybe after I say each sentence, you'll translate? I'll give you, we take pictures.
I'll tell you, the translation, the Nusach was designed Originally, it started in the Mishnah, and it went through quite a few Gilgulim until the final script was designed by the Chazon Ish. And my translating is not going to help you understand it, because it's very complex.
Okay.
But one thing is important is the reason why there's a question. If somebody doesn't understand or anything about Shulis and Meiser, but he knows he has to do what you guys did here and read this, does it work? Or does it not work? He knows nothing about it.
He understands what he's reading, it's probably okay.
But he doesn't understand what he doesn't understand at all. He's never heard about it even.
But then there's no line. You can never draw the line of how much do you have to know in order to be able to do it.
The whole idea is that you're actually giving away.
So you'd be like some genius to be able to do it.
So the idea is whatever I share with you guys today, even if you don't remember any of it, Himat, but all of a sudden the world is more familiar to you in an abstract way, like, hey, I remember kind of guys, Dan said a few things about this and a few of that, say about a Kohen, something about a Levite, something about redemption out of a coin. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. That's already called enough that you guys can do it next time. Alright?
But we need a coin.
Bezat Hashem, you guys will get a membership at Keren de Maestros and you'll never have to worry about a coin.
Yeah, expensive.
Yeah,
it's
60 shekels.
60 shekels?
Yeah.
ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם שקדשנו ונצחי סבא וציוונו להפריש את ירומי שונא עשרה
אסתרה
היסר מאחד ממאה שיש כאן ומה שמונח במצרד הרי הוא תרומה גדולה בצד ימין
צד ימין just according to the script.
It's sad to say. But I had in me actually a shikan for my shumlach and me in the track. ועוד תשעה חלקים כמותו בצד בצידו של הפירות הרי הוא מעשה ראשון פעמים אותו אחד ממאה שיש כאן שעשיתי במעשה ראשון עשוי תרומת מעשר מעשר שני בדרומם של הפירות ואם צריך מעשר עני יהיה מעשר עני המעשר שני ברוך אתה אלוהינו מלך העולם אשר קדשנו במצרים וציוונו על פדיון מעשר שני.
אמן.
מעשר שני יהיה מחולל על פרוטו במקדה המיוחד בכיוון זה יותר מכיוון מעשר שני, כפי תנאי הקרב. אם יש כאן פירות רבי, יהיו מחולנים על פרוטו במקדה המיוחד בכיוון זה יותר מכיוון מעשר שני, כפי תנאי הקרב. אותו שאינו שווה פרוטה מהמעשר שני או הרבי, יהיה מחולל בשוויו במקדה המיוחד בכיוון זה יותר מכיוון מעשר שני,
Shkoya! What's that of? Please don't squeeze too hard.
Because we got permission to use the coin in that fund, right. He doesn't have to own it, but he can use that coin anyway.
The coins are in the building, yeah.
Is?
The coins are in the building. There's
That's good
many enough. Thousands of coins. Because we had to make a calculation. I told you the coins can fill up. So we had to make many calculations.
Right, but like the person doesn't have to own the coin himself. He can.
Right. He doesn't actually own the coin himself when you're a member of this this organization, this fund.
So can I have some help?
Gentlemen, except one thing. Before you leave, I just want to... Yes, you can. This has... It's called now Truma. Truma is... the property of a Kohen, and even though he can't eat it today, it still has a high level of sanctity, which means that we have to honor it in such a way that it's better when we get rid of it now, because even the Kohen can't use it. We take it, put it in a plastic bag, and then put that plastic bag into a garbage. Why? Because we just want to honor.
It's got its own seat.
Huh?
It's got its own seat.
Is that a problem to have it with something like the peel is not part of the
no,
the
peel is not part of it.
Does that mean you can't put the peel in the bag?
You can put the peel in the bag too. This is Truma, this we don't do anything with. Rabbi, I'd be happy to sit with you for as long as you like and spike through every word of the Nesach. It's very complex.
Guess what I was kidding, by the way. Kashe la madrin. You see this one? Real kashe la madrin pepperoni pizza in Israel.
Guys, enjoy.
Don't need my basaret.
All right, gentlemen. Yishal koyach. I hope you guys enjoyed that.
Bore
Prietz, yeah.
I hope you guys enjoyed that. We'll talk off the mic. I mean, I'm talking about the fruit. And,
my
pleasure. Sure. Thanks, man. Okay.
Really enjoyed that.
I'm glad you guys were able to come. Listen, it's not easy trying to make this stuff interesting, and I hope I made it interesting to you guys. And,
I've been dying for sharing this for ages. I never understood it very well. You read about it in the Gemara every now and again. Right.
Yeah,
this is a
great
class. Yeah. Well, where should we put the peels?
Can
we throw them in with
this?
Yeah. We should
probably... Where should we put
the
peels?
Achshav,
the new
one.
Is it dried out a little bit? Is it a little bit after its time?
It's very nice. Okay.
It stays tasty, yeah? Right. It tastes like that one. I can't tell if you think so.
I don't see
that.
Who?
Me.
Why were you being jerk?
No, I talk a lot in class. I try to be like guys.
You're that guy.
My guy. I thought it was an awesome class.
That's
a
working
class.
Is that brand new? How was the place?
Brand new.
They finished filming today.
Yeah. No, they finished this room today.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
This yeshiva hasn't been here for long, has it?
No, this building has been here for about 7 years.
Yeah?
Yeah. But the kolo, so to speak, has been around for about 30-something years.
Mm-hmm. There goes my tie.
Pomelo's growth here in Jerusalem.
Yeah. You're right. Citrus, it's not ideal climate for citrus, but still not too bad. You know what, I'm just going to take...
It gets cold here, I think.
So how big is your garden?
I have a little balcony, very small, and I don't know if there's very little there. It's nothing special.
I don't
have time so much for my garden.
I used to have a lemon tree was also a little hedge. it wasn't a little bit of a hedge, it was like 8 feet tall. It was like 8 feet tall. Pretty big.
Guys, was that educational for you guys?
Absolutely.
You learned stuff.
It really was.
I tried to make it a little bit practical.
You've done this talk before?
I've given the shul before. Everyone is different, and I modify things, and I work on each one independently. And, you know, like I said, I'm doing one soon just on Shemitah. We didn't get into Shemitah at all.
Mm.
That's
nice.
Shemitah is fascinating. You know, it's...
We are an interactive bunch of people.
Yeah, you guys were great, really. I did a... The last time I had a group of younger fellows, we were about 50 guys.
Wow.
But that was a full day. I took them out to vineyards, and we went out to orchards, and we managed did a whole
thing. You'll divide up the extras.
Take them in.
We're doing a pizza.
So that'll be.